to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. So I'd contacted my guest today upon recommendation of one of the most awesome people in this industry, Pia Poynton. I went to Pia to see if there were any women out west who were killing it and might want to share their story with me. She came back with one name, Bronte. But she also came back with a second name. Bronte is not quite at the level whereby she only goes like a, by a single name just yet. It's actually Bronte O'Donoghue, and she is the head of marketing at Eagle Bay Brewing and also held the same position with West Australian OG brewery, Feral. It was pretty funny, actually. I was in WA recently on a family holiday and went to the Indies party at Shelter Brewing, and I actually ran into Bronte there. That was our first face-to-face meeting. It was kind of funny when she told me that she didn't realise I was from Western Australia, to which I said, nah, I'm from Tassie, and her face went to all sorts of confusion. Like, why the fuck are you here? Anyway, I was there as a guest, and it was a great night, and Bronte commanded the room, so I think this is going to be a great interview. Anyway, let's get into this. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Eagle Bay Brewing's Bronte O'Donoghue.
Hey, Chris. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I do feel a bit bad for letting that first message slide through to the keeper, but it was great to see you in person at the Indies. So, yeah.
I always say to everybody that getting anybody in this craft beer thing onto the microphone is like herding cats, because they're busy, they're running their own businesses, they got their own things going on. This is like a freebie type, taking up their time. So actually getting them to commit to the interview and then getting them on the interview. You were easy today. There were no technical difficulties with you. Most of the people that jump on here, we're spending the first 15 minutes trying to connect up and Bluetooth this and internet check that. And
yeah, you're probably dealing with brewers. Hey, I use the exact same analogy with getting in contact with the brewers is like herding cats. But
Yeah.
Marketing department, easier.
Yeah, us marketers, we're bloody amazing, I reckon. So was I kind of right with my description of what you were thinking that night at Shelter Brewing, where I've just popped up in your face and introduced myself?
Oh, I did laugh. You're like, I told you I'm not a creep.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this makes so much more sense now. But it's hard. Like, COVID's been hard, being – even my mates that I would usually see a couple of times on the East Coast and people in the industry that I'd be in contact with, you just kind of fall off the grid, particularly being in WA.
Yeah.
You were lucky to sneak through the borders being a Tassie boy. Yeah. But, yeah, otherwise it's been pretty difficult.
You see no one.
Yeah, I did get over to Gab's Melbourne.
Me too. Well. We were so lucky because that was when it all bloody exploded.
Yeah, literally. But it was so funny because I was quite nervous about heading over there because we had Tusk for Feral the following week.
Yep.
So if I got stuck in a lockdown, I'd be screwed. And I was like, if it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to happen at Gab's.
At a beer festival where everybody's drunk and hugging each other.
Yeah. But then at the last minute, we were like, oh, why don't we go see like a footy game, because I've never been to the MCG.
The Carlton one, was it?
It was Collingwood versus Port Adelaide. Oh, and we were right, like literally, if we'd been any closer, we would have been in the Port Adelaide supporter section because we got tickets last minute, and that's where they went into lockdown for 2 weeks straight. And I basically had to argue with the nurses when I went for a COVID test because they were originally trying to tell me that I had to isolate for 2 weeks. Yep. And I was like pulling up every single bit of information to be like, look, I've got a really busy week next week and here's all my proof that the Victorian government says I'm all good. The West Australian government says I'm all good. Please let me go.
Oh, I'm glad you got to go over there because you were a mini celebrity at Gab's. You rang the bell, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did get to ring the bell. So that was very exciting.
Lucky.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was, I have the video. I'm incredibly awkward in those situations because I just keep moving.
Well, how hard is it to put your hand up and move a chain? How can you be awkward doing then, that?
Yeah, and then the guys were yelling at me to stop, but I couldn't hear them over the sound of the bell. So I was like, what's worse, stopping early or going too long? And all the punters are standing at the bar, like waiting for the bell to finish so they can be served their first. Yeah.
Hurry up, we want a drink.
And I'm just going for gold.
Oh, nice, in the corner.
What eventually I realized everyone was waiting for me and was like, okay, better cool it now.
Such an awesome honor. I've never been bestowed such an honor. I probably never will be. And Gabs, if you're listening, I'd love to do it. But I did I met Ken Grossman from Sierra Nevada on when he rang his bell. Somehow I knew someone, I forget who it was now, introduced me to Ken and we got a photo together. Then he proceeded to go and ring the bell. And that's about as probably as close as this man will ever get to ringing the bell at Gabs. What an honor. So awesome.
Oh, it is funny. It's like just a small thing, but literally. So when I first started at Feral and went to my first Gabs going back 3 or 4 years ago now and understood the cultural significance behind it, I was like, one day that will be me.
Yeah.
Don't know when. It's just a silly little goal, but it's one of those goals that you keep in the back of your mind. So when I was up there ringing it, it was nice to kind of come full circle from that first moment when I rocked up, didn't know anyone, didn't know what I was doing, to 3 or 4 years down the track. And I was like, if I do nothing else in my craft beer career, at least I've come this far. Yeah,
and now you're a fucking rock star who has flames painted on her fingernails. So good. I love it. I feel like I was checking out the Hall of Fame this week for all the people that have rung the bell. It's really cool on the Gabs site. And I feel like if you're ever going to start a podcast, go to the Gabs Ringing the Bell Hall of Fame and just pick off the list because there's anybody who is anybody is on that list. The only person who I picked up wasn't on that list was poor old Matty Kierkegaard. I feel like he's got to be on there. The prof is on there, but Matty is not. So I'm sure he's done it.
Right.
But maybe he didn't get his photo.
Probably when they come up to Brizzy.
Yeah. Don't know. I feel like he's got to be on there.
I reckon if you were looking for podcast guests, your best bet would be to find some bar like after the AIBA,
yes,
go down to Fed Square, wait till 4 in the morning, and whoever's still standing around, they're the people you want on the podcast. Yes.
Oh, I've been to a couple of AIBAs. Again, never won an award. Maybe one day, who knows? But they are I actually did a podcast walking around the room one night, and as I've got further and further around the room, just getting people's comments about their awards and stuff, it got more and more loose. Great nights, the AIBAs, just magnificent. Maybe everybody will get together next year because it didn't happen again this year, did it? Or did it? Oh, no.
No, it did.
I was watching on a laptop this year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happened same time as Gabs.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, which was nice.
Good nights.
That was my brief, like, social interaction. It was so lovely to see everyone and you're like, oh, it's been so long. This is so lovely. Can't wait to go back to some sort of normalcy, and then it's like, okay, guys, see you never.
Yeah.
But can't complain. We're so lucky.
Yeah, I feel like Western Australians and Tasmanians, we have just been the luckiest in the country with this whole bloody thing.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, definitely. But it will be nice. I will definitely savour that first beer when I can get back over there, hopefully at some stage next year.
Are you originally Western Australian?
Yeah. So I grew up in Perth. Grew up in Perth, went to school here. Would like to perhaps move, but that was another goal that I kind of set myself. I said when I turned 25, then that would be the year. And I turned 25 in February.
This year?
Of last year.
Oh, so
February.
I'm old enough to be your dad. This is terrible.
No. So I turned 25 then and you. I was like, okay, this is the year. And then 3 weeks later or 4 weeks later, we were in COVID lockdown. It's kind of put a spanner in the works with my manifestation.
Yeah. Yeah. You got plenty of time to do 25. I would love to be 25 again. Jesus Christ.
Well, I'm 26 now.
You're a big girl then. Right. All right. So you've grown up in Perth. What were your dreams of doing? Because I think you, at one stage you were working in cosmetics in marketing, were you? Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, so whilst I was studying at uni, I've always loved writing. Writing's probably my forte. That's my strength. I admire so much people who are amazing visual artists. Like all through high school, I would take, all the art classes and stuff, but I was just a bit crap at it.
Me too.
I just don't have that visual imagination to pull it off.
I totally get you.
Looking around and I just feel like I don't have that puzzle piece. But I love writing, and like that's kind of my way of visual storytelling is through copywriting.
Yep.
So then I thought I'll leave school, I'll go and study journalism because that looks all, flash hot and I get to write. And I think in one of my first classes I said, you kind of have to write like you're writing to a 12-year-old because the average population isn't necessarily the brightest and they're trying to ingest a lot of content really quickly. And I was like, oh, 12, that's a bit crap, isn't it? And then I persevered for a little while and realized that's not really my cup of tea. I thought about creative writing, but then I was like, maybe I should give marketing and public relations a crack because it's obviously business orientated, but you've got a lot of the writing and communication elements.
And you can actually make money in that as opposed to being a creative writer where it's really hard.
I don't really know. Like, I'm sure it would be great to study, but where do I go from there unless I'm going to get picked up as an amazing poet, which is highly unlikely.
Yes.
So, went into marketing and PR, and then at the same time I was working for a cosmetic company called Mecca, which is the biggest cosmetic company in Australia, which I loved. Like, I love makeup and skincare. And I also, I do love that industry, but I found by the end of maybe 5 years, I was keen for something a bit different.
Yep.
And I think I'm very much I don't do things by halves. I'll like jump in the deep end somewhere else and then get out and jump in somewhere else. And I saw an ad pop up for Ferrell, and the ad, Ferrell's branding, it's like really gritty, cheeky. It just screamed authenticity. And at the time I was still studying when I saw the ad. I hadn't even graduated uni yet. So I was only just beginning my marketing journey. I didn't even really understand storytelling and authentic marketing. But I just knew that resonated with me better than anything else I'd seen. It was the only ad that I'd seen where I was like, I want that job.
Yep.
That's the one for me.
Sorry to interrupt. Just a couple of things you can do if you want to help spread this craft beer gospel. First up, Apple Podcasts. If you've got it on your phone, find the Beer Healer interviews. Scroll all the way down to the bottom, rate, review, subscribe. That's the best thing you can do to help me out. Other than that, whatever podcast player you listen to this on, follow me or subscribe to me on that one. And then also find me on Instagram and follow me there. Thanks for your help. Were you a beer drinker at the time?
Yeah, I was, but also I was a student. So like I couldn't afford craft beer.
Yeah, true.
So I totally bullshitted on my CV, which I've told them. They're like, that's what you do as a marketer. I'd done this student exchange in Germany a few months earlier. And was drinking shitloads of beer over there, but I was drinking beer was the cheapest thing. I was drinking steins of beer purely because it was cost efficient and it would have just been cheap shit. And I went and I looked up all these different types of German beers and European beers and put in my resume, like, I've been in Germany and I've been drinking Hefeweizens and Berliner Weiss and blah, 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 blah. Total, like, I didn't even know how to pronounce the words properly going into the interview.
God.
But I was like, I'll stick to my guns because I really want the job and I'll see how it goes. And it obviously worked well for me. And a couple of people did ask me later, did you actually drink that stuff in your student exchange? I was like, fuck no. Like $2.
Oh, that's gold. I love two things about that story. The fact that you bullshit your way into a job, because I've been pretty good at that in the past too. But you were drinking steins of beer I love that because that's all I wanted my wife to be when I first met her was a beer drinker, and she was so not. But I would have fallen in love with her instantly if she'd have walked away from the bar one night with a stein of beer. That is great.
Yeah. Well, I have always loved craft beer. But it was funny when I started at Feral, I think I'm quite into very bitter and very big flavor profiles. So yep. Warhog straight off the bat was my favorite without even necessarily, I don't think I knew the ABV on it. And we went into a meeting with a marketing agency and Bren Barris, who was still the owner at the time, asked if anyone wanted a drink and they were all driving. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll have a Warhog. And he just looked at me with like, he was like,
that's my girl.
I knew from that moment I'd hired the right person. Your probation was over.
That is so great. Oh, so you entered the business prior to the sale, did you?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Can I just say, how fucking good are beer rations when you work at a brewery?
How good are what?
Beer rations. You know, when you get your cart in a week or whatever it works out to be.
Yeah, I don't use the word ration because you get a lot. That's definitely
not. No. That's how we used to refer to them at Lion. Like, you do get a lot. It's so good. You become very popular with your friends very quickly.
Yeah.
And anytime there's a party, you're expected to cater it, basically.
It's a good, definitely a good gig. But I think that you need your staff to be your number one brand ambassadors. That's just like an easy thing to do.
It is.
Your staff and your staff's mates, like my girlfriends, were all still studying even longer than I was. I started at Feral the same day that I graduated from uni, so I timed that perfectly. Yeah. But yeah, I kind of took them all along for the craft beer journey as well, and now we all. Cool. We all love
how good's that. I used to always say, like, if you are a new brewery starting out or a new brand starting out, the best thing you can do is run an ambassador program. You know, and it's cheap. It's using your own product. It's easy, and if people love you, that will just come across in their conversations. I used to do it all the time at Lion. Oh man, a free beer I gave away for beers just to mate, come to the brewery and pick up six cartons. Go to some parties over the summer and just hand these out. As simple as that.
Oh, exactly.
No one says no to a free beer.
No, exactly. And I think like people maybe don't understand as well with ambassador programs that you don't need to look far to find ambassadors. Your staff and fans of your products are the people to go to first because they're the ones that are the most appreciative and they're the ones that are going to spruik it the best. Yep. You don't need to find someone that's got 25,000 Instagram followers. You can do that as well to supplement, but particularly if you're a small business and you've got no budget, like start with those immediate to you and then work outwards from there.
Yeah, no, good idea. So you sort of jumped from, I'm going to say, a fairly female-dominated industry with Mecca and cosmetics and jumping into probably more of a male-dominated industry, really, with craft beer. It's pretty masculine, especially back then. It was still pretty masculine. We sort of hadn't gone through a lot of the changes and hadn't really had the discussions we've been having of late to try and fix our fuck-ups. Was there a time when you were looking at this and you were sort of a little bit worried about that gender imbalance as a young woman coming into this industry? Did that concern you at all?
To be honest, it didn't concern me jumping in because I am a self-starter and I kind of know my self-worth and I really backed myself into it. It wasn't until I was in the industry itself and I went to a few events that I realized how bad it was.
Yep.
So it's almost been the longer I stay here, the more I realize the work we have to do, to be perfectly honest.
Yep.
Whereas I think when I first started, I was quite naive and I still knew that it was a boys' club, but like I can handle myself. I didn't really give a shit about that until I kind of grew up a little bit and realized almost the dangers of being young and drinking shitloads of booze with a bunch of blokes, particularly when you're traveling for different events and things like that. I do wish, like, I think women coming into the industry now wouldn't be that naive because of all the conversations that we're having.
Yeah. You said, I can handle myself, which, you know, I talk about my wife in the same way. She can handle herself. But the thing that bothers me is that why should you have to handle yourself? You shouldn't have to be put in that position to have to handle yourself. But luckily for you, you can. But there would be some out there who wouldn't be able to handle themselves.
Well, yeah, I totally agree with that. But I just don't see, like, so some men around booze are just idiots.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Like, honestly, particularly when some of them, I remember having conversations and I'm thinking, like, you're 20 years older than me, man. Why am I having this conversation?
Hey, steady on,
steady
on. On the side. No, I totally agree. I think that's creepy that someone who is 20 years older than you would think, I'm going to have a crack and think that's okay.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, which is honestly, like, quite draining. Not just like for every woman that I have this conversation with in this industry and in other industries, it is quite draining, and it is right. Like, it shouldn't be necessarily on us to do it, but I can't see change happening if it isn't kind of pushed from the women and sharing their lived experiences and kind of standing up. And it's also boundary setting. Like, I think a lot of the time you kind of put up with stuff. Like, when I first started, I put up with a lot of stuff because I thought it was banter and, you know, I was new and trying to fit in and young and I was like, oh, it's just a bit of banter, it's just a joke. And then those jokes build and things build and then eventually your boundaries shift and then you're like, how did I let this happen? But it happened over such a long period of time and your boundaries became blurred. Like, it takes a lot of strength to, you know, be, you kind of seem like a party pooper when you're like, actually that joke isn't funny. I don't like that. I don't appreciate it.
I think,
like, it takes a lot of strength to set those boundaries. Yeah. But, and also I think that women thought they probably couldn't, you know, sometimes you feel a bit stifled and you're like, who's going to support me if I do this? I'm going to be alienating myself if I do this. So you just put up with it. But now that there is more women, like, even every year that I go to the AIBAs, I reckon it literally doubles. Like, there's double the amount of women I see there and they're all amazing. And so I think simply just the importance of having the diversity there. And also diversity in leadership roles, so it can come from the top down, like the importance of having women in management teams so that these little things aren't the norm.
That's courage,
That's going to make the big difference because and then obviously, you know, men have to sort their own shit out, but that's a whole other systemic societal issue.
Yeah. That's on my generation to teach the next generation about that. I've got a 17-year-old son and, you know, he's starting to go to parties. So we've had to have these conversations about, you know, what's the right and wrong way to behave around his friends, male and female, at these parties in terms of, you know, when's it okay to, you know, if you're having a few drinks and you're kissing a girl, you've just got to make sure that it's all above board in terms of how much have you both had to drink, you know, just it's a really difficult conversation to have.
It's a positive because a generation ago, none of these conversations were happening.
Yeah, true.
So I'd only look at it as a positive. Like, it's still a hard conversation, but it's, breaking down that cycle with this generation teaching the next, I think will be the big difference. And I think even where I've come in quite young into the industry dealing with a lot of blokes that are a lot older than me, but now there's a kind of a next wave of people coming through.
Yeah.
I think in the next decade we'll see a big change.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. It's just absolutely exhausting.
I was just going to say, somehow we got onto that conversation where I wanted to make this all about your amazing career, but do you get sick of the conversations heading that direction anytime you do one of these kinds of things?
Yes.
Or do you feel
100%,
you
get sick, not not, you know, shitting on you in any way, shape or form, because they're all important conversations, but I do find that happens so much, because it's like, oh, it's the token woman. We'll talk about the woman's like things that are happening now. And I do love having those conversations, don't get me wrong, but it just is exhausting. I don't think people realize, particularly because it can potentially be bringing up traumas with things that we have experienced. So it is quite draining having the same conversations again and then not necessarily seeing change happening from it. I know change is starting to happen now with the women from Via Agents for Change in particular have been doing an amazing job, and I'm more than happy to be having these conversations, because I'm sure they'd be feeling the same way. They'd be so tired, but they understand the importance of it and the importance of progression. But yeah, it does happen all the time. I think there used to be at the beer conference, they'd have a pink boots panel to, but then the pink boots women made a good point to be like, oh, this is a WA beer conference, to be like, let's not have a pink boots panel. Let's just make it the norm that women are on all the panels.
Yeah, like, I like that. No. All right, let's draw a line in the sand. I just want to say, I'm as the beer healer thing, I'm more than happy to amplify any of these conversations with anybody who wants to jump on and have this. That's how I sort of feel my way I can help in this sort of thing. But I also, yeah, don't want to make it all about that. So let's draw a line in the sand there right now, and let's talk about some of the other stuff, because you have had a great career to date, even though you are only freaking 25. 26. I want to ask about, because I worked for Lion, you know, obviously not independent. You worked for Feral pre and post independence, or whatever, you want, you know, after the sale sort of thing. Did you see a change in the way you were treated in the WA industry once that sale went through? Was there a bit of a stigma around, there probably was a bit around the brand, but what about you as a human being working for that company?
Oh, not from an industry perspective, not at all, because people in the industry get it. Like, people in the industry understand. People in the industry had known Brendan Barris and know that he worked so hard and he deserved everything that he got. And people in the industry know that we're the same people. We know that this stuff happens. And I reckon it would be the same for most of the big guys. Like, I had lots of people messaging me being like, you know, checking in, and I've done the same when I've seen like other sales go through. Everyone in the industry is quite compassionate. It's more the trolls on pages like Perth Beer Snobs and social media who probably don't have any industry connection and probably would never say that stuff to my face if I was having a beer with them, but decide that they feel personally affronted, like attacked by what happened, and it's me. My fault that it's happened, and to take, because obviously I did all the social media around the sale, and I would often post from my personal account onto different pages and stuff as well. And you just have to let that stuff not get to you, because you know at the end of the day it's just silly. I kind of, it would be worse for you know, like the guys that are actually selling, that have worked their fucking asses off, that have progressed the industry so far. Like, God, I can't imagine how all the shit, that all the stuff that they would have had to deal with, because it's so unfair for people to be able, for people to look down on them for that. I just, it literally blows my mind how mean people can be on social media, because I do it for a living and I see it all the time, and I'm like, I could never talk to someone like
I know, exactly. Well, on a more positive note, did the sale mean that you personally got access to some great people from the larger CCA family? Again, go back to my time at Lion, and I was working with brands such as Corona, Heineken, Budweiser, and the people that came along with those, and the global experience that I got exposed to, it was just amazing to see these things and the strategies and the plans that came out of those meetings. It was, as a younger person, you know, trying to find their way in the beer game, it was really good. I was just wondering whether maybe you got similar access to CCA.
Yeah, definitely. CCA obviously had a much smaller beer portfolio, and they didn't have any other craft guys. So it was definitely kind of a two-way learning, because we brought a lot of agility and flexibility and innovation, and they probably thought I was super annoying because I loved to challenge everything, because I'd be like, but why are we doing this? Why are we doing it that way? And my boss was, we were very much the same, but then we got excellent results. So
yeah, cool.
But I think the best part was just kind of being a part of a wider team, because for nearly all my time at Ferrell, I was the sole marketing person. So it was nice to have a wider team, like a wider team that I dotted line reported to in Sydney. Only downside was obviously a three-hour time difference in summer, so 5:30 in the morning emails and some fun meeting calls.
Yep.
But, yeah, it just made a big difference to be able to kind of learn and bounce some ideas and share stuff and learn what to do and what not to do and learn how big business operates as well, because, like I said, I started at Ferrell straight out of uni, so I hadn't really had that insight. And at the time, I didn't realize how lucky I was. And now that I'm at Eagle Bay, I reflect back on that and realize that this really unique spot where I was working in a small business that was part of a big business and I had access to the best of both worlds is just so, like, I learned so much. Yeah, I would always say I'm just a sponge. Like, I'm just going into this like a sponge, and I'm just going to absorb everything that everyone says to me, because it might not be relevant now, but further down the line it might come in handy. And that's just, like, paid itself back 100 times over already.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you most proud of from your time at Ferrell?
Oh, God, that's a big question.
I know, I'm pretty hard hitting.
I did love the way, so when we started at Ferrell, or when I started at Ferrell, when we did new product development releases, we'd probably be doing like 800 cases. And then when I left, we were doing, for some releases, over 4,000, which obviously is a whole team improving, bettering everything from the quality of the liquid to our sell-in process. But I think the marketing, being able to kind of take us from where we were when I started in 2017 to where we were in 2021 was amazing, because what I did was I basically shifted everything that I could to local suppliers and local artists, which I think particularly at the time, it's definitely more of a thing now, but at the time in WA, there weren't that many breweries doing it, like, rather than paying an agency for a decal design, I'd be trying to find different local artists, going through Instagram, like literally sliding into people's DMs, because I wanted people that were kind of not undiscovered, but at the start of their start of their journey, at the start of their career, because I realized like how much of an impact that has on someone, some local WA woman or man's career that's just like just in the infancy sort of stage. Like,
you paint it forward a little bit, aren't you? Like, you know, someone gave you an opportunity and a chance when you lied on your resume. And now you paint it forward.
Actually, why don't you say it? Maybe that's the way. But yeah, that's awesome. And you get the best out of those people because they're so enthusiastic, they're so appreciative, they're often like brilliant, but they just are in earliest stages in their career. The artist Pesh that we ended up doing the majority of our stuff with is amazing, and even just to like see how far he's grown and how much he's done in the past 4 years is really like makes me so proud of him.
That's so cool.
And so that was probably what I was most proud of, and just like team, like culture, connection. Like, I know like the production manager at Ferrell would laugh at me. We're like polar opposite personalities. he's very introverted, I'm very extroverted, and it took us a while to figure out how to work best together. And I feel like by the end of my time there, our working relationship and like we were good mates. Like, it's just nice to look back and realize like that I did have quite a big impact on the culture in that business, and I did help the departments to come together, and hopefully that is
that's
lasting.
Nice. Yeah. And I think as you get older, speaking from experience, those relationships are what you probably are most proud of, and the long standing, and you just, I mean, relationships just make, I sound like a broken record, relationships make the world go round, and you're just proving that. And like, yeah, that's pretty much what makes the WA beer scene so cool, I reckon, all those relationships.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that's like what, I mean, it works both from an internal level but also an external level. Like, it's the people. It's the people that make the difference. The products are great as well, but, you know, everyone's got great products these days, as everyone's constantly improving and innovating, and everyone can price it around the same price. The key difference is the people and the storytelling piece behind those people.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah. How sad were you when the decision came down to close the little Swan Valley Brew Pub?
Oh, when I heard about that, so I was obviously already at Eagle Bay. When I heard about that, I was obviously sad because I love the team there, and it's done such a good stint. But it's like a bittersweet moment, isn't it? Like, businesses grow and develop, and the Swan Valley isn't necessarily aligning with where Ferrell's vision's at now. I think they're onto bigger and better things, and hopefully we'll have perhaps a more urban venue down the track. Cool. But it'll be interesting to see where they go. I'm still super invested, I'm sure.
Hard not to be. It's I haven't mentioned this name on the podcast for a while, but a good mate of mine, Dave Myers, he took me out to the Swan Valley Brew Pub back in about 2013 when we were both working for Little Creatures / Lion and some craft beer junket. We had to go to the Frio Little Creatures site or whatever, and we sat out there in the sun one afternoon, and I got to taste all these amazing beers with, I forget who was running the show back then, but he came and sat down with us and talked us through it, and I just instantly fell in love with that brand. I was just like, this is great.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, like, it's a very unique brand that has this massive cult following, and that is just so hard to come by. Like, we're just so lucky, but then also it was the people that made that, and the beers as well, like the innovation, pushing boundaries, also all the tongue-in-cheek messaging, like, the name Ferrell simply meant, you know, we're not domesticated. We're not going to do that domestic mainstream shit. We're going to forge our own pathway and brew stuff that we like to drink. And we believe that if we like to drink it, somewhere out there, other people will want to drink it too.
Yeah,
and it obviously worked. So,
yeah. So after 4 years with Ferrell, was it a tough decision to make the move to Eagle Bay Brewing?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously stoked to be at Eagle Bay and to change it up. And I also, like I was saying, I don't really do things by halves. When I took the role at Eagle Bay, part of the reason was because the demographic is so different. The brand is so different to Ferrell. And I didn't want to just start somewhere else and be like, oh, I can copy and paste some of the strategies that are, well, not the strategies, but, you know, I can kind of approach this in a similar methodology, because I can't. Like, the majority, if you look at our audience on social media, the majority of people who follow Eagle Bay are actually women, which is
really
super cool.
Awesome. I had no idea.
I was quite surprised as well. So we've got more a female audience than a male audience, so that immediately means like all the language and everything that I was using, need to throw that out the window and start from scratch. But I love that, because I love the challenge, and I love.
Did you know that before you took the job? Because I know you're involved in the Pink Boots Society and the wonderful stuff that they do. So were you seeing that maybe going to Eagle Bay is an extension of that, being that you now are talking, you're not having to talk that bloke talk, you can change things up?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I didn't know how strong the female audience was, but Margie had mentioned it to me before. And and I've known Margie for years, and I love her tenacity and her vibrancy and her mark on everything that she's done at Eagle Bay. So it made the decision very easy in that sense, because I knew the team, like I knew the people, and I know the legs for the business. I know where we can get it to go with a few more structures in place and a few more concepts brought to life. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's in quite a pivotal growth stage, which is always a good time to be a part of a business.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And I think, like, I'm very much someone who, much prefers to be in that almost tender growth stage where there's lots happening and you need to be making quite quick decisions, but you're getting quite quick results as well. And it's probably like a, you know, not a riskier time, but it's a more unstable time in the sense that there's just lots happening and no 2 days are the same, but I love that.
Have you ever been told you've like a, what do they call it, an old head on young shoulders?
Yeah, yes.
I feel like for 25, the amount of the things that you're talking about and the level of education that you're sort of spewing out in this interview, I think you just know in your shit. That's basically what it comes down to. That's great.
It's funny you say that, because I don't know if you would have heard of Hugh Dunn. He's very experienced.
I know the name. Yeah.
He would always say, "You're such an old soul in a young body."
Yeah, that's a good thing. That is a great thing. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I visited the Eagle Bay Brewing Site a few weeks ago and tried all the beers, and I've got to give a shout out to Adrian for giving me a few cheeky takeaways that I actually smuggled back to Tasmania in my carry-on luggage.
Excellent.
Take that, Virgin. I think it was 11 kilos of beer on carry-on plus my backpack, so I did quite well with that.
Nailed it.
The point I want to make is that the beers were just like beautiful. They just were style-wise, were just really on point. Magnificent. Can you give us a bit of a history of the place? Because it's been going for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. So Eagle Bay, we're actually celebrating our 11th birthday on Sunday. So we're 11 years old, or about to be 11. And the farm has been in the family for three generations. So the brewery is actually sat on the farm, which is still a fully functioning farm with cattle, sheep. We've got an apiary where we have our own bees, and the vineyard where we grow our own grapes for our wines. So there's lots happening.
Yeah.
Never a dull moment down there. But John, the father of the three owners of Eagle Bay, did say to them, you could be farmers, but I would like for you to go out and try something else first and discover, what else there is to do in life. Go and study or go and work, and then we'll figure out what the next stage of the farm looks like. And Nick went off and studied brewing and went and worked on the East Coast, and Edge spent a lot of time working in hospitality all over the place, and Astrid studied more environmental sciences. And then they eventually all came back and were like, we don't really want to be farmers. We've kind of got our own skill sets and our own experiences now. I think they sat down on the property and were like, why don't we start a brewery? And this was going back, the better part of 15 plus years ago. So it was before, because obviously these things take time. So it was before craft was really craft, but they just stuck to their guns and did it anyway. And they never had, I think the original restaurant, the capacity was only about 200 people, and they never had the idea of packaging and selling, like distributing outside of the restaurant. They just wanted this little concept of beautiful restaurant with a lot of the stuff grown on site and all the beer made on site. and the wines come from grapes on site. And we also have like a provisions program where we make our own honey and all our own provisions and stuff that we sell in the retail space. But it's just kind of flourished from there completely organically. Oh.
It was fucking cranking that afternoon that I was there. My God. Yeah. I said to Adrian, I said, "What? You guys don't even open at night time." So he goes, "Yeah, we don't really need to. Have a look at this." I was like, shit, yeah. And so inclusive in terms of, because often I'll take my wife to breweries and she's not a big beer drinker. She's starting to love the sours, but she's learning, but like champagne is her one true love.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she said, well, she had the champagne. Was it champagne or Prosecco there? I can't remember.
Yeah, so we've got sparkling and sparkling rosé.
Yeah, I think she said the sparkling, and she was like, "This is good stuff." Yeah. She was really impressed.
So great.
Just a totally high quality venue. I love it that Eagle Bay is unashamedly West Australian, and you sort of touched on that a little bit there. And they don't really seem to have. I forget who I was talking to at Shelter that night. He's a really tall guy. Do you have an English accent? Maybe Keith, was it?
Oh, Keith, like our Keith from Eagle Bay.
Yeah, is he the operations manager or something?
Yeah.
Sorry, we're having a bit of a chat about that.
Oh, yeah, I remember at Shelter. Yeah.
And, you know, he's talking about they don't really have any interest in servicing markets outside of WA, because I said I'd never tried any of the beers coming from Tassie.
Yeah,
and it's actually something Hamish from Rocky Ridge reiterated that to me in our chat recently. And I love it that it's WA all the way, but I wish that Australians on the East Coast could get more access to the amazing WA beers, but I totally understand, and it's just a cool thing.
Oh, well, I mean, I was literally on the phone before this talking to our head brewer exactly about this, because I'm like, fresh is best.
Mm.
And it's just, I guess, like, we're never going to pasteurise our products, so I would hate for our products to be landing on the East Coast in a less than ideal state. I want people drinking our beers as they're intended to be drunk, like you direct from the source at the brewery. That's one of the best experiences possible rather than walking into a big chain where it might have sat in a DC for a while and it isn't going to be in the best condition.
Yep.
So I'm just so I think it's so important from putting my branding hat on, it's so important to protect your brand in that way. And if you're going to do it really well. Like I like how, say, Beer Farm have been really trying to make a crack on the East Coast, and they've come up with the funding to build a second brew pub over there.
Yep.
I look at that strategy and I'm like, yes, that's the way to do it.
Colonial did a similar thing, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go all in and brew the beer over there so that people are getting that product the way it's intended to be drunk.
Yeah.
That's the way that I see it. And also, we're still relatively small. So stick to what you know. Like our biggest clientele, and it would be the same with nearly every brewery, I reckon. Our biggest clientele is in our backyard down south. They're our biggest supporters, because they're the guys that come out to the brewery on the weekend for a growler feel and have their Christmas parties there. And I think that's pretty much the same across the board, breweries, even like the big guys like Stone and Wood, all their biggest customers are in that they call it the backyard. It's in their backyard.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think in talking with that too, and seeing the diversity that were of the people at the restaurant that day, I think it's really smart, the range of beers that you've got. You're not pushing amazingly huge boundaries with these things. These are solid on style, quality and consistent, and therefore there's something in there for everybody.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm thinking, you know, we're talking about the Perth beer snobs earlier, you know, that they sort of get on their high horse a bit and want triple barrel aged, bloody double dry hopped, all that sort of stuff all the time. I don't necessarily think that they would be grabbing your beers out of the fridge at a bottle o, but they would certainly enjoy that experience at that brewery. And I think it's a really, you're walking that fine line between a tourism type destination and a brewery, and sort of just trying to cater for everybody. And for me, I think it really works, because I had a magnificent afternoon there between the food and the beers.
Yeah, excellent. And like, we still do a heap of weird and wonderful shit. I think the fact that we were in bottle as a vessel probably hindered our retail sales in the last, you know, 12, 18 months in particular. But now that we're in cans, once we've caught up with all our core range production, the idea is to, you know, then move all our limited single series into canned products and do more of the weird and the wonderful stuff as well.
Yep.
Because we still, you know, we've got a barrel room down in one of the sheds. We've got a lot of stuff kind of simmering away. We've got a lot of concepts in the pipeline.
Nice.
And Keegan loves weird and wonderful shit, which I was stoked about when I started. Nice. I think I said to him, I was like, he took me down to try some stuff out of barrel, and I was like, this is like Christmas for me, because I didn't realize coming into this gig that these would, that this would be here.
Oh.
So we're very much on the same page with
awesome.
We want to see roll out.
You mentioned the cans, and can I say the cans are beautiful. The branding on the cans, I don't know if that was part of what you did or whether that was already there, but
they
stand out nicely.
I can't take credit for that. Was mostly Margie. I just jumped in at the last minute when she had a little baby boy, Jack, who came a couple of weeks early. So we had a pretty seamless handover, which I love. But she's a Pantone queen. She's obsessed with Pantones.
Yeah. I like it.
So all the colour blocking.
For those that aren't. Yeah, I was going to say, for those that aren't in marketing or whatever, Pantone is like the colour swatch booklets.
Yeah.
And everything that you, every colour you see on the internet or in print or whatever has got a Pantone number associated with it.
Yeah.
It's quite nerdy if you're in that part
of
the world.
I think it haunts her in her dreams, just aligning everything perfectly. So, yeah, definitely you'll see all the can artwork and labels and stuff rolling forwards. They're going to have beautiful color palettes and
they
be very Eagle Bay-esque. And you can see even with the cans we've got, so Kolsch is obviously the color of Eagle Bay when you go down to the water.
Lager, how beautiful is Eagle Bay?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, exactly. Lager, God. If you go a little bit more south, it's that blue. Pale's meant to be your summer sunset color, similar with cacao. So everything's got a little bit of a reference to the bay, very subtle.
I like that.
But
that is, isn't it? Yeah, but that's cool. I love that stuff.
It's
like marketing nerd stuff.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I love the fact that you brew a Kolsch, because I think they're so underrated, those beers. I was very happy to see that, and the mid strength, because I'm a dad. I have to drink mid strength a lot of the time. So for me to see that you had that mid strength there,
hazy mid strength, absolute banger.
Picked up a 4-pack of that as well, because, that's my jam, and it was amazing, that beer, just amazing.
Yeah, 100%.
So cool.
I'm definitely getting – my palate's come full circle, hey, from wanting all the really big, boozy, hoppy, full-flavour stuff to being like – and I'll be the first to admit, when we went into cans, it was like, I still don't really see, like, lager. Lager isn't really a thing that speaks to me. And then 3 months later, I'm fully converted, drinking lager.
I love it.
24/7.
I'm the same. I'm craving the clear beers and the simpler stuff for a while.
Yeah.
I just love it. Yeah. And when you pour that beer into that glass and you can see right through it, you hold up to the light, it's just, I don't know, there's something about that. I love it. It's so awesome.
Yeah. We actually have a Pilsner in tank at the moment that's been cold conditioned for 90 days.
Oh, wow, that's going to be clear as hell.
Yeah, dry hops 3 or 4 times through that process, and the final product is stunning. Like, the clarity is beautiful, and it's just
I hope you fucking Western Australians really enjoy it, because that's all they're going to see it.
I'll send you a 4-pack now that I've mentioned it. I'll have to send one over. Now I feel bad.
as you say, fresh is best. And I was even talking with Hamish the other week about the same stuff, getting his beer across the other side of the country. You know, you can't control. And he was talking about some of his beer going, I think it might have been kegs freezing on the way over and stuff. So bizarre. So I agree with you. Keep it in WA and make people come to WA and experience the amazing joint that is Eagle Bay Brewing down there. I was so impressed. It was just beautiful. And then Adrian told me to take a drive down into actual Eagle Bay itself. And I wish we could have gone for a swim in there, but we didn't have our gear. Actually, we'd swum earlier that morning at the aquarium. down that way.
Oh, nice.
And so all of our wetties and stuff were wet and the kids were sort of a bit tired by then, but I would have loved to have had a swim in the Eagle Bay.
Yeah.
So beautiful. So beautiful. Well, what's the future for Eagle Bay? Obviously, you've got a bit of weird and wonderful limited releases coming out. What else is going to be going on?
Yeah, we've got a lot happening. Heaps of releases, a few quite interesting collaboration brews where we're working with different suppliers. So it's not
cool.
Like different things like gelato and barrels and coffee and yeah, weird and wonderful stuff to come aplenty. And then I think with this brand refresh as well, we're just rolling that out across the wider business. And it's also been a time for us to reflect on, you know, what our strategy is for the next couple of years from a sales and from a marketing and branding perspective. Like refreshed cans are a lot brighter and more contemporary and fun. So I'm taking a bit of a deeper dive into, you know, how our branding and our storytelling and our communicating is going to present like that moving forwards. Yep. And we're also working a bit around the community piece. So we've got something called Local Good Things already in the works where we work with local creatives to kind of capture them in their element and get some beautiful content around that. But we're talking about how we can take that Local Good Things further to align with some of our different community partnerships, what that would look like, and also our sustainability program, because we do, like, sustainability is one of our core values and we're constantly working on improving our sustainable practices in all areas, but we haven't really communicated that story before either. So, lots to explore.
Plenty to do. Well, yeah. I think you've landed in an absolute plum role. So much scope for you to grow as a marketer, experience things, try new stuff. Congratulations. It's really awesome, I reckon.
Yeah, thank you. I'm really happy to be there. And it's just a beautiful culture, beautiful place, good beer, good team.
Yeah.
What more can you ask for?
Yeah, I know. You sound pretty happy and you sound like you've got a lot of energy and enthusiasm. But what about, like, for Bronte O'Donoghue, what's next? Are you going to look like, you know, maybe emulating some of the careers of the great marketers that have been kicking around, you know, the next Sterling Howland or Jesse Jungle Waller, Pia Poynton or Ash Cranston or the next Zoe Ottaway, or are you going to be the first Bronte O'Donoghue marketer extraordinaire?
Well, I'd like to think I'm going to be the first Bronte O'Donoghue. I'd hate for one of them to ring me up and say I'm ripping them off. I know them all.
I can really imagine Zoe Ottaway ringing up. Look, Bronte, stop fucking ripping me off. Yeah. She's one of the nicest people going around. I don't think she would do that. So,
I do think it's great. You know, a lot of businesses didn't even necessarily have, like, a lot of beer businesses didn't have marketing people when I started 4 years ago. Obviously, all those guys have been around for ages, but it's nice to see more and more people getting into it. It's nice to see the recognition that it's an important part of a business. Like Guy Southern always says something, he's like, you can't just be a man and his dog and start a brewery these days now. Like, you need strategy, to have a plan on how you're going to roll your products out to market, what all the different touch points, you need to be thinking about it before you're doing it. Whereas I think back in the old days, and when I say old days, you know, like 10 years ago, it was a bit more cowboy.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think Eagle Bay have landed themselves a good one in grabbing you to be their marketing manager. Is that what you call marketing manager or marketing and communications?
Head of marketing.
Head of marketing, yeah. Yeah, no.
Everything kind of falls under that umbrella way. Yeah.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Old head, young shoulders, very, very impressed with what you've achieved in your short time at the age of 26. It's terrible. But, no, you've had an absolute ripping career and you're only 26, so the sky's the limit for where you're taking this. And I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you today and just hearing your stories and just allowing me to let you run off and tell them, because I love that when I'm on a podcast and someone wants to just share their stories and is happy just to take the reins of the podcast and just leave me sitting here listening because it's so enjoyable and I've loved our chat today.
Well, I love talking shit, so that's training women.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so glad we got to meet face-to-face at Shelter the other week.
Yeah.
It was a fun night. And, yeah, thanks for joining me today. You're an absolute weapon and all the best for you and Eagle Bay's future. So cool.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is actually my first beer podcast I've done. So
Oh, really?
It's been an absolute pleasure.
I'm tipping from what we've just had in the last hour or so, this is not going to be your last because, yeah, you're a great storyteller, obviously. So well done, Rob. Thanks very much.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
Cheers.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.